We now continue our interview with author Jeff Savage in Season 7, Episode 2, Part 2.
Well, one of my questions was going to be, when everything that you have is done, what's next?
Yeah.
And you just answered that earlier in the podcast, talking about, you know, 2 weeks ago you came up with this idea, and now here you are.
Yeah.
Already beta reading it. Yeah. I mean, sheesh.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so we talked about Jen. I'm going to go back to my question that we talked about before we kind of took our nice, lovely, wonderful big tangent off. I know that she has helped you a lot with your writing, but as far as in the writing world, where do you...
Well, let's take two different sides. So there's one side that's the writing itself, and we talked about the critique group, and I really think that's been a big thing for me, not just in polishing my writing. I mean, I really believe that a writer should be constantly improving, that if you go back and read a writer's first book compared to where they are now, you should be able to see improvements in their writing. And if you don't, they're not a good writer, in my opinion. I really think that should improve.
There's no help.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. You know.
No stagnant.
Yeah. Exactly. So from the critique group, that's helped me a lot. Plus the motivation to just every week, what are you working on? What are you doing? That's been great. From the publishing side, a lot of people know that James Dashner and I have been friends from way back. And in fact, it was kind of funny because when James first met me, I had published with Covenant. And he had published a series with Cedar Fort.
Jimmy Fincher,
exactly, that's right. And so he's like,
That scared my daughter to death.
Jeff Savage, you know, I mean, he's sold thousands of books, you know, and that kind of thing. And we've taken turns, and now he's the one, you know, who's accomplished all these incredible things. But we've really kind of both, I think, been motivational for each other, you know, where it's hard for us to get together as much as we used to. We get together for lunch about once a month, and with all the things we've got going on, we don't as much. But we've really both been kind of inspirations for each other, kind of in that same way again, you know, and a little bit of competition. Like if you've got a friend and you go out and play one-on-one basketball all the time, I want to be hitting New York Times.
The consumer, and I'm pulling a blank here. I'm trying to go back to AP government and stuff, that's what it is when you're in this. The competition drives quality,
Absolutely.
What is that called? There's a concept of that.
I know what you're talking about. I can't think of the word right now, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Competition drives quality in that.
And I think that is part of, we talked about this Utah writing community, and I think that you have the supportiveness, and you also have the competition, you know. When I read, you know, Jennifer Nielsen's False Prince, or see what Ali Condi did after, you know, she left DB, or see what James did, those are the kind of things that are motivating, where you come back and you say, okay, they're all, you know, these are New York Times best-selling authors. These are people who wrote this kind of quality of stuff. What can I do next? Where can I go? You know, how am I going to accomplish that? So,
well, and another thing I was thinking of, actually, in regards to a cooperative society of writers and stuff that we have here, is also the readers. I think another reason why the writers thrive here is because we have such avid readers
we
here.
Do.
Because I don't know about you, but when I read something, say I finish your book, and I think, when's the next book coming out? But then I think, what else is like this that I can read?
Right.
And that's the thing about books, is when you have read a book, you know, it's a consumer product thing, right? What do they call that? My brain is
fine. You're going to get this word.
For example, like makeup. You use it.
Right. Sure.
So you need more.
Exactly.
So you read the book, so you need more.
That's right.
It's a consumable.
It's a consumable product. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not just thinking, I'm not going to read again until Jeff comes out with his next book.
No.
You don't do that. You go, what else can I find that's like this?
Yeah.
And so when you know
that's
each
right.
other, when you know the market, when you can have that kind of society, you can say, hey, if you like my books, you like James.
Well, that's what even the library has done on their website. When you look up Jeff's books, there's probably The Maze Runner right there, or something right there comparable to it.
And Shadow Mountain did that, you know, really well. Okay, you know, if you've read Levin Thumps or you've read Fable Haven, you know, if you've read this, these are books that they've come back, and you kind of know, if I go out and get a Shadow Mountain book, it's going to be middle grade, written to this general kind of audience readership. We've all become pretty good at doing school visits and that kind of thing because of that same encouragement. You know?
Well, I think that plays a big part in our ability to help each other, too, because even though there is competition, if someone else succeeds and their book's like yours, they'll be more likely to find your book.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Ooh, that's a really good point.
Exactly.
And Utah readers are good because of the awesome and fabulous teachers here.
Yeah.
That's right, Sheila. A personal blog.
Let me pat you on the back.
It's really true.
It is true. They're not just readers. They're critical readers. Yeah. I mean, they really are. They can come back and say, this is good, this was not so good.
I love the phrase you used, gatekeepers,
earlier.
When you were saying, the parents and the librarians and the teachers, they're the ones who are leading our children to the best books that they can read.
Exactly. And that's, see, gatekeepers has been used in a negative way when people come back and they say,
when you're talking about censorship?
Agents and you know, I'm trying to sell my book, but this agent won't accept it, and so this gatekeeper is keeping me from getting it published. Or these editors, they're only looking for certain types of books and that sort of thing. So in some ways, it's been used in a negative way. But in a positive way, the way that you're talking about, that really is something where, in the publishing world, when they're talking about gatekeepers, what they're normally talking about is parents, librarians, teachers, and these are the kinds of people, like, for example, with Case File 13. I got a Starred Kirkus review. It was a Junior Library Guild selection. Really great reviews in Publishers Weekly, School Library Journal, that kind of thing. No kid will ever see that. There will never be a kid who reads this book who will say, oh, this got a Starred Kirkus review. I mean, they'll see it on the back of book two, okay? But they won't know it. But the librarians and the teachers know, okay, if this got a Starred Kirkus review, I mean, for one thing, it's a book about kids and zombies. This is not a literary book. So a book that is more of a commercial book that also got a Starred Kirkus review, that tells you something. The False Prince got a Starred Kirkus review. Allie's series matched. All three books got Starred Kirkus reviews. Those are all more commercial books that tells you the writing's got to be pretty good. Kirkus won't give a starred review. They won't say, you know what, the writing kind of stunk, but the plot was so cool, we'll give it a starred review. They don't do that, you know. So
those are standout stories.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the gatekeepers can look at that, say, here's what I know about it, let me read it through, now I can recommend it to kids. And especially in middle grade, they don't get the same marketing. Like when Maze Runner or Matched, when those came out, those are YA series, and so there's a ton of marketing dollars thrown in early on to build the series up and take it from there. With middle grade, they rely a lot on the gatekeepers getting behind the series and recommending the series, because what you'll see with, whether it's a Goosebumps series or in this case things like Warriors or Ranger's Apprentice or stuff like that, those are books that started out with lower numbers, but as they were recommended and as librarians and teachers, and then they blew up and got really big. And so that's kind of a fun thing from this middle grade side is not knowing how many books are going to be in it, what it'll do, but knowing that starting with some good reviews means that I'll have librarians and teachers recommending it.
For sure.
The potential is there.
It is there. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You try not to think about that.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Well, you never know what will happen.
Exactly.
That's great.
Do you ladies have any other questions for Jeff?
Well, he answered mine with the 2 week ago Facebook thing. That's what I wanted to ask him about.
Now, did we talk about that on the podcast, or did we talk about that before?
We talked about it at the beginning.
Did we?
Well, at the beginning of the podcast.
Yes.
Oh, did we? Okay, good. All right.
I think so.
Okay.
About your idea.
Yeah, about the YA idea, exactly.
Yeah, because I'm having coffee.
Okay,
in the microphone.
I want to know just before we close, list the genres you've written in. Published in.
Sure. Okay, yep. So Cutting Edge was a high-tech thriller, and that honestly was not thought out in any way. It's just I was in the high-tech world as a CEO at that time. I liked a lot of things about it. I would rewrite it a little differently. But
I know the beginning. I remember.
Yeah, exactly.
You would rewrite that. Yep. I never noticed anything.
I didn't either. But
yeah. As an author, it needed some work, but it was a fun story. Then the next book that I wrote really was out of the blue. It doesn't fit.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit in anything else I've written. It's
the Job one.
That
right?
was the Job one. Yep. That Into the Fire.
Really?
Yep.
That Into
was.
The fire.
It was. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of retelling the story of Job. You know, again
modern
in the high tech
right?
world, but modern day. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Modern day
cool.
retelling the story of Job. So I wrote that. Then I wrote Dark Memories, which is actually a horror novel. That was the third book that I wrote. A lot of people know that. I wrote that about 10 years ago. That was what I got my first agent with. In fact, she came back when I talked to her on the phone the first time. She said, I was up with your book till 2 in the morning. And I said, oh, that's a good thing. And she said, I finished it at 11. I just couldn't fall asleep until 2.
Yeah. Oh, great.
So I wrote that, didn't end up selling it, went back to Covenant, and wrote the Chandler Covington series. So that was mystery. So we've got, so far, high-tech thriller, family drama, I guess we could call it, general fiction maybe, mysteries, horror. Then I wrote the Far World series, so that was middle-grade fantasy, and then Case File 13, which again is still middle-grade, probably not as much fantasy. I mean, what you probably call it is middle-grade horror, but people don't tend to put those two words together.
It's not a good mix.
Yeah, but if you think of Goosebumps or something like that's
so thriller maybe.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, something like that. So
a little scary.
Yep.
Scary adventure.
That's right.
Yeah.
Scary adventure. That works
fun.
Exactly.
But very.
And
fun.
Then I still would like to write. I've never actually written directly to Farworld. Would probably be the closest, but I haven't written directly for the YA market. I wrote a book called Demon Spawn, which takes place in hell. That was actually the book that I got my current agent with, Michael Barrett, but the timing was just bad. I mean, he loved the book, but it was dystopian with angels and demons. And right now, by the time it came out, everyone had all of those. You know, it's like, saturated, exactly. So then this other book that I'm working on now is I'm not even entirely sure what you'd call it. It's not dystopian, that kind of thing. But yeah, so a little bit of everything. And we're excited to see, I mean, with Dark Memories,
tell us about that.
We haven't talked about that yet.
We need to talk about Dark Memories. This is the one that just came out this month through Covenant.
Yep.
And should I read the back or do?
Remember what we talked about last night?
Yeah.
You were going to read some of Dark Memories on the podcast.
Okay.
I can do that.
I'll
read a little section.
I
need to do that.
Okay. So give us a quick little overview premise of this before you read your section.
Yeah. Well, what you've basically got is you've got. This is a horror novel. It started out as a police procedural with some supernatural elements. And when I sent it to my first agent, she rejected it, and she said, I really love the supernatural elements, and I wish you had carried that all the way through. And that actually made me a little nervous because I've read a lot of... I mean, I'm a big Stephen King fan, and Peter Straub, and Clive Barker. A lot of people that write pretty scary stuff, you know. What are the two guys that write together that have all the kind of horror novels? I can't remember. There are two authors that write. But another group, I'd read just a ton of books by them. And so the question was, can I write a horror novel that my mom can still read? I wrote it. It didn't end up getting published. Bantam asked for rewrites twice. Didn't end up quite selling it. And so it just sat on the shelf. And then probably about 4 years ago, I think, Kirk Shaw, it was right about the time that I had written the first Farworld book, he said, hey, can I read it? He was an editor with Covenant at the time. And he said, can I read it? And I said, sure. And so I gave it to him, and he got done. And he said, hey, I think we can publish this. And I just laughed. I'm like, no, you can't. There's no way Covenant would publish a horror novel. They just wouldn't. In fact, even now, I'm a little nervous because people are going to go into Deseret Bookstore.
No, I am.
They're going to expect, you know, a primary teacher and an FBI agent to fall in love. And this is not like that. No. We took out a little bit of the gore. But it's still scary. I mean, my 12 and 15-year-old son were telling me, Dad, there's no books that actually scare you. And so I said, well, I'll read you a couple of chapters from Dark Memories, and you can tell me if they're scary or not. And I got done, and they were like, you wrote that, Dad? Yeah. So
is that
it's
good or bad?
I know. I think it's good. I mean, the bottom line is that it is... six kids who are lost in an abandoned gold mine 30 years ago. It actually takes place. It originally took place in a small Mormon community in Utah. And one of the things, just to avoid some question of...
labeling.
Is we made it a small Methodist community in Colorado, just to kind of separate them more. Yeah, you know? So we set that up. But these six kids get lost in a gold mine. And it takes them 5 days, but they manage to rescue all but one of the kids. They never find the sixth kid. This little boy who really didn't fit in with the rest of the group. And so they dynamite the mine closed. They realize he's got to be dead. They dynamite it closed. And now 30 years later, someone is killing
The
other five, exactly.
Oh, my.
And all of them are seeing the ghost of this little boy. And our protagonist is Cal Hunt, who's a police chief. And his wife, he moved to this small town from L.A. where he was a homicide detective to... raise his family, to keep them in a better environment. He didn't want bad things happening to him. And his wife just died by a freak accident. He totally does not believe in an afterlife. He doesn't want to accept it all. He's like, you know, basically I've been hurt enough. I know she's gone. I've seen dead people. I know she's not coming back. I can live with that. But he's discovering that something is going on in this cave, and there is something dark and evil in this cave, and something really bad happened 30 years ago that no one's willing to talk about, and it's leading to the deaths of these people. So.
Seriously, I love how it's intermingled, these little italics. He is coming to drag them deeper into the darkness.
Wow.
If you read it at night and it doesn't keep you awake.
Okay, I'll need to not do that.
All right, can't wait to hear this.
Okay. All right, so let's see here.
Before you read, did you say that you brought a giveaway copy for this?
I did, yep. I brought a giveaway copy of Dark Memories, that's right, and two giveaway copies of Zombie Kids.
So. Okay, so if you pay attention, because after this we'll give you some details about how you can enter.
Absolutely. Okay. So what we've got right now is we've got this character who has walked outside. He's one person has already died, and he's read about it, and he's freaked out, and he thinks that he's been seeing
really
the ghost of this little boy.
Is this one of the people from the...
This is one of the kids. In fact, one of the main characters of the original six, yep. And so he's been seeing the ghost of this little boy. He's freaked out. He decides he's going to go out and chop some wood to kind of unwind.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. To unwind.
All right. So, stopping at the edge of the grass, he tried to peer into the darkness. For a second, he thought he could just make out a pair of coal black eyes staring back at him, and his heart took a leap. Suddenly, it wasn't his woods he was standing in front of at all, but a dark, cold cave. He pulled the bottle from his pants, took a long swig, and it was just his yard again. Still, he wished the dog would show up. At the back of the house was a cord and a half of solid ash. He'd taken it in trade for painting a couple of bedrooms. Not exactly the payment terms he preferred, but he'd put down only one coat of the cheapest flat white he could find, and at least the IRS couldn't ding him for this, so he guessed it had worked out okay. Every time he felt his temper starting to heat up, he came out here and started splitting logs. He found it relaxing to watch the razor-sharp blade of his axe ripping into the heart of a big chunk of wood. The repetition of the actions helped burn away his anger. Lift, swing, thunk. Lift, swing, thunk. It was coming up on 9 o'clock, and even though it was late May, the air had a bite to it. It had been cloudy all afternoon, and a slight mist hung in the air, as though the sky couldn't make up its mind whether it wanted to rain. Ezra thought about going back into the house to get a jacket, then decided against it. He'd worked up a sweat pretty quickly, chopping logs. A few years before, he had run an extension cord out to the backyard. Stringing it to an old 4x4, he'd hooked up a bare light bulb with a chain to turn it on and off, but now as he tugged on the chain, the light refused to turn on. He stretched to jiggle it. No dice. He'd told Tamara 1,000 times it didn't pay to buy the cheap light bulbs. Did she listen to him? Apparently not. Again, he considered going into the house. He thought there was a package of 60-watt bulbs under the kitchen sink, but then he'd probably have to listen to Tamara complain about how dinner was getting cold. It would be a hassle. He could do without the light. It wasn't like he was scared of the dark. The only things Ezra Rucker was afraid of were death and taxes, and so far he'd done a pretty good job of avoiding both. He just preferred to see what he was doing. A guy could lose a toe chopping wood in the dark. The thing was, although he would never admit it out loud, he had been feeling a little uneasy lately. Since he'd read about Mandy's death the day before, he'd been struggling with a bad case of the Jim Jams. Not that he and Mandy had been close. He wasn't even aware that it was her until he saw the picture in the paper. They'd hung around sometimes as kids, but he'd lost track of her after her second marriage. It wasn't her death that rattled him as much as the memories it brought back. The whole mind thing. He thought he'd gotten over that a long time ago. His father had certainly seen to it that he didn't linger over the past. 2 days after he was rescued, he'd been out on the back 40 doing his chores. Then he'd seen Mandy's picture, and all of it came rushing back like a river of foul-tasting water. All day yesterday and today, he'd been spooking himself. He knew he couldn't be seeing the things he thought he was, but knowing it was all in his head only made things worse. He picked up a log and balanced it on the stump he used as a chopping block. Spitting into his palm, he picked up the axe. Lift, swing, thunk. The wood split neatly in two. He set one of the halves back on the block. Lift, swing. Something rustled in the trees, and he just missed bringing the axe down on his foot. Staring into the darkness, he swept a cold sheen of perspiration from his forehead with his arm. Prince? That you, boy? No answering bark. The wind, he thought. He lifted the axe above his shoulder and brought it down. Crack. The axe had narrowly caught the edge of the log, sending it careening into the darkness. Suddenly the night seemed far too quiet. Holding the axe crosswise in front of him with both hands, he took a step toward the trees. Somebody out there? The splintered piece of wood was lying only a few feet from the edge of the trees. He picked it up and tossed it into the darkness. There was a faint crackling sound as it settled into the brush, but nothing more. He took another step toward the trees before thinking better of it. Probably just a raccoon. The dumb dog would scare it off once he found his way home. Returning to the stump, Ezra swung the axe and buried it halfway to the handle. He didn't need this aggravation. He'd just go in and catch the end of the basketball game. Heading to the house, he stopped to study the sky. It looked like it might rain in earnest after all. He'd better put the axe away in the garage so it wouldn't rust. Taking two long strides back toward the stump, he was reaching down for the handle when he realized the axe was no longer there. What the? He stared stupidly down at the battle-scarred circle of wood before sensing motion off to his left. He pivoted quickly. He'd been a pretty good athlete back in school, but not quickly enough. He just had time to see the blade of the axe, shimmering silver in the moonlight as it rose toward the sky. The last thing he heard was the front door swinging open and his son calling, "Dad, time for dinner." Lift, swing, thunk. The night closed in on Ezra for good.
Oh, wow.
Oh. So, yeah.
That's the one scene you told me about at the Covenant dinner.
Exactly right. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was really the goal, was to...
But not in a gross way.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
There are a few... I mean, there's a scene where someone, like, claws the flesh off their face, but...
but it doesn't describe it in great detail.
No, it's not. Okay. It's designed. When I wrote it, what I wanted to do was what I've always admired in Alfred Hitchcock, which is that he let you create the scene in your mind.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a vivid imagination, which most readers do, I don't need to show you the axe going into someone's head. All I need to do, because I've set
Thank
it up,
you.
Is just say lift, swing, thunk.
Yeah.
And you fill in the rest of it for yourself. And so that's really was kind of the goal is, but it's scary. And so that's why, like I say, I it'll be interesting to see
How
what the response is.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Because people are just like, Covenant doesn't do horror novels.
Is this right?
But they do very, very, very suspenseful slash could be considered horror books.
Oh, they do.
Books,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, you read some of Stephanie Black's stuff, for example. Or Greg Lukes, exactly.
Or yeah, very same.
And there's, yeah, so, I mean, it's a slightly different take in that the evil in this, there is real paranormal evil. Okay, you're not going to discover that, oh, it really wasn't a ghost at all, or there really isn't something in the mine. It
or
was
in
just
Dan's
some guy.
Book.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is...
It's the lighthouse. Yeah. Fire away those pesky kids.
That's right. And that's really, I think, where the...
Meddling kids.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, it is a real horror novel. It's really scary. And there was some balancing that we had to do where Covenant was comfortable with it. But at the same time, and I think one of the reasons they did decide to do it after lots of senior people there had read it, was that there's a great message. I mean, by the end,
awesome.
You will feel uplifted. You know, when you read the very last word, it still gets
me out of
the
humanity.
That's so good. I can't
That's
wait.
Cool. Okay.
Personally, I think there's a difference between stretching and pushing the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely do, yep.
I know that some people, they always say you're never going to please everyone.
Right.
But I've noticed that sometimes with certain bookstores and different things, they try to please the very small percentage, the one
right.
percent of 1% that bother to speak up or complain.
Yep.
And so they get catered to when the general public is looking for something like this.
That's really the key. You know, I would do these Relief Society presentations and I would talk about various books, and for years I've been mentioning this and people come, and they're kind of like whispers.
Really?
Like they kind of get the fact, they're like,
oh, that's
so
funny.
Where can I get that horror novel that you were talking
about?
Oh. You know,
like, but put him in the corner.
You couldn't before. I mean, before you couldn't go out, You would have to have someone read it and do research, but you couldn't go out and buy a horror novel and know that it would be clean.
No, you get
exactly.
Super gory,
right.
Super sex.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Like stuff. That.
So yeah. This is, I really do hope that the response is good, that people like it, that it sells well. I don't know that I'll do another novel like this with Covenant just because of the rest of the stuff that I got on my plate. But if I open a doorway here, I mean, just today on Facebook, Carrie Lynn Blair, mm-hmm. who I've been hoping for a long time would get back writing,
yes.
you know, was talking about maybe that she had a book that she might be submitting to Covenant. And she said, you know, what I really love to write is a horror novel. And I don't know if you know that
this
Carrie
help,
has, like,
sure.
ghost hunting equipment, and she goes into graveyards. I mean,
oh,
she's amazing.
Yes,
she so is. If Carrie could write a horror novel because this was well accepted and did well and Covenant was open to it, that would be just a great
right.
reward, you know. So,
what is the alternative? If we are interested in reading something a little supernatural or along those lines, our only option is to go for something that contains content that is
right.
objectionable
right.
to what we would like
exactly.
to be exposed to. So there's obviously a need and a
yep.
market for it. We just need to make sure that people go out there and get it and
yes.
read it, and there's
good
feedback for
exactly.
it.
Absolutely. That's really a good point.
I'm hoping it won't be like there was a lady in my ward back when I was writing this, and she'd read, you know, some of the Chandra books and different things, and she's like, so, you know, what are you working on now? And this was actually a rewrite of it, and I said, well, it's a horror novel. And she's like kind of quiet for a minute. She goes, oh, well, I guess that's what sells. I want to say, no, romance is what
yeah,
sells.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Believe me. Oh, that's so funny. So this, yeah, there's no, like, Dark Memories 2, you know.
No, this is totally
is
a standalone.
Okay,
yep,
cool.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of a nice feeling.
It's a refreshing.
Yeah, I would bet,
nice,
though.
Yeah,
I would bet
yeah.
it's nice to just have
yeah.
the one and be done.
Yeah, I think there's actually been a little bit of...
resurgence?
Yeah, yeah, because there's been some kickback against... Everything is series these days, and, you know,
yeah.
to the point that there are people
and it's
that are
frustrating
like,
sometimes
yeah,
as
yeah.
readers.
I don't
impatient
even
want to
go
readers.
Read a book.
Just look
readers.
At the backlash between the news that there's going to be 3 Hobbit movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
exactly.
I love Middle Earth as much as
yeah.
anyone.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and even I was kind of like, well, 3 movies, I can handle
yeah.
that, but then I... Yeah, but 3 movies,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
Some people were just, you know, get more of our money, get more of our money. And
right.
I think that with some series, you can see where they... are trying, like, that's the whole...
They are absolutely...
Well, I mean, most series. Why would
yeah.
you want to sell 3 books?
Right, exactly.
More money,
yep,
right?
That's exactly it.
But the point is, like, some of them really need to be standalones. I
yep.
loved that Lisa's
yeah.
After Hello is a standalone.
Is a standalone, exactly.
I wouldn't
right.
mind maybe someday knowing a little bit more
yeah.
about Sam and Sarah, but really, I'm like, I would be okay
sure.
if we left it alone.
Yeah.
And
you're
just said, they maybe they'll get together, maybe they won't,
yeah.
we don't know, and it's okay. Let,
yeah.
let my mind
know.
Just
yeah.
right.
have the potential
and I don't
of them.
Think, that's, you know, we were talking about The False Prince before. Even though that is a trilogy, I liked that is what publishers define as a standalone with series potential.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That could have
definitely.
Been a standalone book,
mm-hmm.
left it right there with
mm-hmm.
nothing more, and you could have went, okay.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
That's
oh, exactly.
Exactly.
That is very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to go about it, too, is just,
yeah.
you know. But then there's the whole problem you talked about earlier about the whole, you know, trying to work in book 5, what,
yeah.
and what something that happened
it,
in book
if,
1.
If the publisher
that,
does come
so.
Back and say, hey, I want you to make this into more books, you know.
Right.
So, but I think as an author, there's reasons. I mean, I've got the 5-book Far World trilogy, 5-book trilogy,
mm-hmm.
whatever you want to call that, where there was a complete arc and I couldn't leave it. I mean, I couldn't wrap it up in 4
mm-hmm.
books or 3 books because of how... of the
it
pacing of how the story is set. Yeah, the structure.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Case File 13, which it'll be at least 3 books, but it could be 12 books, it could be 15 books. I mean, each one of them kind of going back to, again, my youth and Sheila, you know, when we had Nancy Drew and
oh,
the Hardy
yeah.
Boys
oh,
and that kind of, you know.
Nancy Drew.
Yeah, exactly.
Babysitter's Club.
Yeah,
yeah.
Babysitter's Club, that's exactly right. You know, and I guess actually
she
if you carry
high,
it forward,
yeah.
Animorphs, you know, and all those
yeah.
kind of things. So
yeah.
you've got that, which is fun to be able to do, and it's fun to jump back into that. But with Dark Memories, it was fun to be able to just go, yeah, no, that's it. You know, the whole story is complete. You'll be satisfied when it gets done. You know, I mean, it's
it
you know.
It's a refreshing change.
Yeah.
Really, there's nobody left.
Everybody's dead.
Totally not true.
Yeah, that's cute. I like that, Jen.
Well,
I
guess
yeah.
Yeah.
We kill everybody else.
A quick question about that. Do you see a trend in publishing or anything where people are going to shy away from trilogies
yes.
or sequels?
Yes,
is
very
that
much
happening
so.
Already?
It is. Yeah, publishers right now, I've talk to a lot of authors, particularly in YA right now, where they are either saying, okay, it's a standalone or it's two books.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the reason for that, part of it is the kickback against trilogies and stuff, but also part of it is committing a bunch of money to three books. So what do you do if you launch a trilogy that's clearly written as a trilogy and it doesn't do as well as you'd hoped?
Then
you know,
you're stuck.
You are stuck. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've talked to some authors with smaller publishers who are exactly in that situation, you know, where they wrote four books. They're all part of it. I mean, you're left hanging after the first book, and it didn't sell well enough, and the publisher's not publishing them anymore, and their readers are saying, when do I get the next book? I mean, it's exactly what I ran into with Farworld.
With Farworld, I know.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a point where you were going to just put out them by yourself?
Yeah. What actually happened with Farworld, and I get asked this a lot. I mean, I get probably 2-3 emails a week still asking me that.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
So it's nice.
Well, I know I'm talking about it.
Exactly. The whole plan was to do 5 books, but we did not sign a 5-book contract. What we did is sign a 1-book contract and another 1-book contract.
Mm.
And so when the first book came out, based on the success of Fablehaven and Levin Thumps, Shadow Mountain published a lot of Case File 13 and Farworld. Unfortunately, at that time, they were cutting back on a lot of things. And so, you know, the big 2-month tours. 13th Reality. Yeah, what did I say?
You said, oh, Case File 13.
Oh, sorry, yeah, 13th Reality, James Dashner series.
Yeah, because that book four took a long time to come out.
It did,
mm-hmm.
And for the exact same reason is that they didn't put the same marketing dollars that they did into the earlier series, to the point that basically we thought they were done. I mean, when I would talk to Shadow Mountain, there would be some talk, maybe we're not going to do any more fantasy
mm-hmm.
series.
Mm.
We're definitely not doing the kind of big marketing that we did for Overton and Brandon. And then there was a turnaround. And I don't know all the inside details, but what I do know is that when Janitors came out, by that point, financially, they were back in business and were doing that.
Mm.
And so what had happened is I had been told by Shadow Mountain, the series is done. If we continued it, and we probably won't, it would only be in paperback, all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
But I knew I had a bunch of readers. There were 30,000 copies of Waterkeep printed, and those are all gone. There is nothing in the warehouse. And if you combine that with libraries, people sharing books, you could probably, I think you could conservatively estimate that there are 40,000 to 50,000 people at least, right? Possibly as many as 100,000 people that have read that book. Okay, and I know the emails that I get constantly. So I just said, well, you know, I'll self-publish it. I actually contracted with Brandon Dorman, who did the covers of the other books, to do the artwork and everything. I was going to self-publish it. And back in January, Chris and Heidi said, hey, we want to take you to lunch, and we want to talk about Fourth Nephite, and we also want to talk about Farworld. And so Jennifer said, well, what do they want to talk about Farworld? And I said, e-books or something. She said, is there any chance they do want to do the series?
Well, because that's what they did with, they put 13th Reality 4 in an e-book first.
Exactly, that's
mm-hmm.
right. And that's what I thought, is that maybe they wanted to talk about doing an e-book, and I didn't want to do that.
Right.
So I was really kind of pessimistic going into the meeting, and I said, no, I promise you, I've talked to Chris, there is no chance they want to continue this series. And, you know, then they're like, well, great, let's, you know, go to this nice restaurant, it's my birthday, and I'm like...
And bring Jen.
Yeah. This was really bizarre, but when we met, Chris said, you know, my son has been reading the Farworld series, and he just loves it, and he's coming back and telling me this stuff, and I'm saying, well, have you tried this series, have you tried that, and he's like, no, Dad, you know, there's all this incredible stuff, this is so amazing, and he said, you know, it just occurred to me, all the great things that we did do in that series, and we have all these readers, and we have this series, and yeah, it'll be 3 years between book two and book three, but it was written kind of for older readers anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my next door neighbor moved in, and she's like, oh, my husband loves your, you know, books, and they have kids and everything like that, you know. So, yeah, so
yeah.
When we came back, I said, here's the thing, Chris, I would love to finish this, but only if we're going to do all 5 books, only if we're going to do it in hardback, only if we're going to have the same artist, and only if we're really going to have a real marketing budget for it.
Right.
And he agreed completely.
Bargain.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly.
Well, when they're coming to you, you kind of can play your cards.
There's no bargaining.
That's cool.
It just, if I wanted to do it, I wanted to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to spend 2 months going across the U.S. They're actually working right now. They've got a script, and they're filming a book trailer for it with live actors and everything.
Fun.
They're doing displays, I think, in the Deseret bookstores. that'll have paperbacks of book one and book two, which weren't available on paperback until
right.
now.
Oh, okay.
With coming soon. They're doing mailings, just a bunch of stuff. Really, really, I couldn't have asked for anything more. And so,
that's so wonderful.
It's really exciting to come back and have that done. But it was.
Aren't you glad you didn't jump the gun and just rush right out to get it self-published?
I am, you know, and that goes back to a conversation that we were having before, and something my agent said that I think is great. And he was talking about the pros and cons of self-publishing and how you can put something out an ebook really quickly. And he said, just because you can self-publish something doesn't mean you should. And in this case, I mean, that's kind of how I feel. I've got Demon Spawn sitting out there, this YA novel mm-hmm. that I wrote. And Michael has said, you know what, I think this could get published, but let's wait. But I really, had I jumped that gun and then couldn't go back and realize that I could have finished that series the right way, I would mm-hmm. have been really disappointed. And so sometimes that patience, Dark Memories, I could have self-published that a long time ago. But instead, I got to be able to have it come out, you know, and find a bigger readership and do something that Covenant hasn't done before. So that's been great.
So you'll be
I'm just so happy for you.
So, thank you so much.
So great.
In this world of instant gratification.
Yep.
And especially when it comes to books, when we want the next book now and all of that, it really takes a bit of patience maybe a bigger ability to step back and see the potential for a bigger picture
right.
when it comes to publishing. I don't think that self-publishing is necessarily wrong. I think that just the appropriate steps need to be taken beforehand. Everything you would be doing with the traditional must happen with a self-published, or the quality just
right.
suffers.
It's your name that you put out there. I did a blog post recently about 99-cent ebooks and kind of my feeling about that. And one of the complaints that I had is you can't say, well, I know this isn't really my very best quality. I know it isn't edited as well as it could be, but you're only spending a buck, right? Because the thing is, someone is investing. I mean, let's say it takes you 10 hours to read a book and you could make 10 hours at McDonald's. They're investing $100 in reading your book. And so if your book is garbage, it didn't cost them 99 cents. It cost them $100.99 to read that book.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't like it, are they really going to go out and buy your $2.99 book or your $6.99 book or your $10? You know, they're not. They're going to say, this author is not very good. Well, that's your name.
And it's true. If you're if someone is selling their work themselves for 99
right.
cents, what kind of value do they put on themselves and their work?
That's very true. And again, I won't say that there aren't some good 99-cent ebooks out there. And there are also some authors like Dave Farland, for example, Dave Wolverton, he'll have some of his old books that are out of print, who he'll say, okay, for the next week, this is free or whatever, and it's a way to introduce it. But exactly. And I can totally see. I mean, that's like the movie going out of the regular theater into the dollar theater.
Right.
Kind of had its run.
That's a good point.
Yep.
But you know the name, too. You know that name is going to carry something
and
with that.
And you also know that it was professionally edited, that it's a quality book that you're putting out there.
Right.
Exactly.
You can look at the reviews and you can read all that.
Yeah.
I really think establishing yourself as a quality author in the long run is going to make you a success better than any, you know, plethora of 99-cent books.
Yeah. See, I'll tell you one other comment that my agent also made, and this was really early on. This was when Demon Spawn hadn't sold yet, and we were talking about, do we take it to second-tier publishers, basically a little smaller than the big New York publishers, as opposed to kind of focusing on Case File 13, which at the time we hadn't even talked about. And he said, you as an author are focused on this individual project and getting that out there, and that's all you can see. My job as your agent is your entire career. And he said, you know, you've had Shadow Mountain, you've had success with them. We really need your next book to be with a big six publisher. The next book that I gave him was Case File 13, which did sell to Harper, and it worked really well. And so, yeah, I do have a book sitting on the shelf that I really like and that I've gotten really good feedback from. But career-wise, it was exactly the right move to make, even though it didn't feel like it at the time.
How long did it take you to find out that Harper had picked up your book? I mean, from the time they got it.
Yeah. It actually went really fast, which is, you know, it's one of those funny things, again, that you wait so long. I mean, I had, when the Farworld series had been canceled, Dark Memories was just hanging around doing nothing. It was going back and forth.
It was a Dark Memory.
Do it. Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, do we publish it? Don't we publish it? Demon Spawn hadn't, you know, even gotten rejections. It just, basically it was like, you know,
just
it's just, it's out there. Yeah. I was having lunch with Rob Wells, and I told him, I honestly think maybe I'm just going to take some time off. You know, I won't stop writing because I love writing, but I think I'm going to stop writing publicly for a while. You know, I just was burned out, you know. And so I had gone back to my agent, and he said, "What else do you have?" And I said, "Really nothing, you know." And I said, I've got this one book about these three boys who like monsters. And, you know, I actually took it one time. I went to this retreat, and I read the first chapter to this editor, and her response was, "Well, you know, boys might think it was funny." And I mean, that...
Oh, I thought it was funny. Cute.
I had loved it when I wrote it, but I just set it aside, and I'm like, "That's really all I've got." And he said, "Well, send that to me." And I'm like, "No, that's okay." And he goes, "No, send it to me. I want to read it." And I said, "No, it's so different than Demon Spawn. I really don't think you'll like it. Let me just work on something else." He's like, "I can tell you. Just send it to me and let me look at
it." That's so funny.
So even when I emailed to him, I'm like, "Okay, Michael, you don't have to read this. If you know, this whole thing.
It's coming with a warning."
Right, exactly. So I send it to him. And on our next call, we come back and we briefly talk about Demon Spawn, that we're going to put that on the shelf right now. And he goes, "Okay, I want to talk about Case File 13.
Well, Zombie Kid.
Zombie Kid, yeah. And he's like, and he said,
"Cute title.
We don't have to." He said, "Do you have any ideas for more books in this?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah.
Do you have more?"
"Do you have more of this that I could read?" And I'm like, "Why?" And he goes, "I love this. This is great.
Oh,
this is
fun.
The voices, the characters are so good. I want to pitch it as three books, and I can think of right now already some editors." And I'm still going,
"Wow.
Really?" So, you know, I finished writing it, finished writing the book. We put together a synopsis for three additional books. He put it in a newsletter, and about a week after the newsletter came out, we had several publishers interested. My editor, who's here, was actually leaving one publisher and going to Harper. And so we waited until he got to Harper, and then we submitted it. And Harper wanted it, and Penguin wanted it. I mean, literally about a week after we sent it out.
Scholastic wanted it, but they couldn't get back.
Yeah, there were several publishers that couldn't respond in a quick enough time.
How exciting.
That's
huge.
And
it was the one that you were not...
That was the one that you weren't sure of.
Exactly right, yeah.
Wow.
It was the one that
downplayed.
I didn't believe in, you know. And I honestly kind of didn't believe in it because... It's very much my sense of humor. I told someone recently that if I have an autobiographical book, as you know, I mean, I didn't turn into a zombie, but that's the way that, you know, I was with my friends and screen around it. You know, the elementary school they go to, where the kid lives, the dinosaur hill, those are all where I grew up. I went to that school, and so that was really, it's something that would have made me laugh, you know, and sometimes that's just a key, is finding that right, unique voice, you know. So
they say, write what you love.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, exactly. Write what you love.
Very much so. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good. Well, this has been an excellent podcast. We always love. I mean, I hope you don't mind that you do all the talking.
Yeah.
Because you always have so much to teach us and to say, and I never get sick of listening to you.
It's a lot of fun.
I mean,
fun.
Even when I run into you at book signings and stuff, I feel like I'm learning something. You always have something new to tell me. So.
Well, thank you. I like books. I like writing. I like the publishing world. It's a fun thing to talk about, and I keep learning too. So
that's awesome.
You know what? Everyone in our writing community and out here, they think so highly of you. I mean, really do.
Well, you get what you give too, and you're always willing to impart of the knowledge that you have, and that's why you learn and know so much, because you're willing to share what you know with everyone. I've never, other than discretion, heard you hold back from any sharing anything that you've learned or know.
I do like to. I feel like I got a lot of good feedback from the authors at that time who were available to give me. And so, you know, it is something that I think you need to kind of be able to share and stuff like that. You know, you look at story makers and you look at all the authors and everything who are out there, and other than like a keynote or a publisher, they may, you know, they'll sell some books or they might get $25 for this. They're not doing it for the money. I mean, they really are doing it to go back and share. And that's a great thing.
Yeah,
exactly right. Yep.
Well, that's why he does the school visits too.
Yes.
I mean, those are so fun, and we do it. I mean, yeah, there's promotion of the book, but most of the focus is on turning those kids into readers and having them connect with an author, because we've seen over and over and over again that when kids connect with an author, they will read that book.
Yes, they will.
And once they have read a book, they don't
They'll
stop there.
Places.
It was what Shanda was talking about before. You turn them into little book junkies. Everybody thought that kids were going to stop reading when Harry Potter finished. But no. They didn't know.
They went looking for more.
I think I've read more than I read after Harry than before.
Exactly, right. Right. Yep, agreed.
Well, and investing in children that way is never a waste of time.
No, that's right. So. That's exactly right.
And I'm glad that you guys have that mindset, too, that you're going in there, yeah, your book does get promoted, but the ultimate goal is to teach those children to love to read and to love the written word.
Yep.
And maybe someday become authors themselves.
That's right, yeah. Oh, I've got lots of pen pals that are, you know, telling me about their latest story they're writing, you know,
cute.
And different things like that.
So. That's awesome.
I teach kids how to write a story in the presentation.
I say, that's
wonderful.
What you did before. Seriously, you go back to your classroom if you've had an author come like this, and they want to write.
We're going to write our story, Mrs. Daly.
Well, as a zombie kid, we actually are sending out to all the schools that we're visiting a bunch of discussion and writing prompts.
I love it.
You know,
to give them ideas to write.
Right. That
I can't wait.
Some are serious, but some are fun. Like, you know, when Nick turns into a zombie, the boys have to figure out what he will eat. Other than human brains.
Yeah.
They will absolutely love that.
You know,
they will love that part.
What would you come up with to feed a zombie, and would you try any of it?
I'm excited about that.
A lot of fun.
Well, thank you so much for coming out and podcasting with us again. It's been way too long.
Let's not wait this
long again.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Thank you.
I'm excited to see. Okay, so this, we're just going to recap. You have, Case File 13 Zombie Kid that came out in December.
Yep.
And then you have Dark Memories
that just came out
in January. And then what's the next one? Air Keep.
Air Keep will come out February 26th. And then the last book that I'll have this year will be the next Case File 13 book, Making the Team, that comes out in September.
Okay.
See, awesome.
So, wham, bam, bam, bam.
Yeah. Two books of the Far World series came out in paperback this month.
As well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can get the first two, it's called Water Keep and Land Keep, in paperback, right?
Yeah.
And also hardcover, I hope, still. Are they still available?
Right now, you can find some Land Keep in hardcover.
I found this one at Deseret Book before Christmas, and it was like, nobody knows! It's on the shelf!
So it's possible. Probably the next thing I suspect they'll probably do is some sort of bot set or something like that.
Okay. You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
That's exciting.
So.
Wow. You have arrived.
Yeah.
So where can our listeners find you online?
You can go to, right now it'll just take you to a blog, is jscottsavage.com. I'm actually working with a really fun artist, and we're getting close to releasing a new website that's just really cool. Lots of cool fantasy stuff and things like that. But yeah, that's jscottsavage.com. On Twitter, it's at jscottsavage.com. And then on
just at jscottsavage.
Yes, that's right. And then Facebook is jscottsavage as well. So pretty easy to remember.
Very good.
Right, that's great. Okay, so let's talk about what we have. Two copies of Case File 13 Zombie Kid to give away, and one copy of Dark Memories.
Yes.
So what were... I think I'm going to do this. You know what? I'm just going to figure out details after, because I want to talk to the ladies and I want to see what they think of my idea. So, we'll be putting details on how you can enter to win those books on the blog. So
cool.
Go check it out, ldswbr.com or ldswomensbookreview.com. You can find us on Twitter at ldswbr and on Facebook, LDS Women's Book Review. And we're on Google Plus, kind of.
Yeah. Isn't everybody kind of on Google Plus?
Yeah, I'm kind of on there, too.
I post the links on there, but I'm still trying to figure it out. But.
Yep.
So thank you for joining us for Season 7, Episode 2 of LDS Women's Book Review. And thank you, Jeff and Jen, for coming to visit us again. And we'll have you back on soon.
Awesome.
Good luck with all of the book stuff.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll catch you all next time.
Bye.
Bye.